Oh, Emma, 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 Emma.
Please welcome back Emma Wilma.
Oh, Emma.
You're Emma. Oh, okay, Emma.
Here we go. Let's get started.
What's up? Emma. Welcome to another episode of Emma's Bunker. I had the weirdest thing last night. It was so disturbing. Oh, also, I should say, excuse me. Sorry, that was rude of me. Welcome to the show. My name's Emma Wilman. I'm doing a podcast while we're on lockdown and maybe beyond. And it's a good time. I don't know how else to pitch you on it, but it is what it is. And here we are, you know, having a good time. Sometimes I'm not having a good time, but when I'm not having a good time, it's not when I'm doing this. You know what I'm saying? Multi-dimensional human being. But this is fun. This is like my favorite thing, to be honest. Well, it, you know, podcasting is. I love talking to people. I love hearing from you. I love talking to the guests, getting to know people. Yeah, I'm with it. But the weirdest thing happened, okay? Last night. Now, if you've listened to the show before, you know I had a sleep talking outburst. I called my girlfriend a whore. I said I'm sick of this shit. I called her a psychopath with my eyes wide open. Not like the opposite. Remember that movie Eyes Wide Shut? Like that, but not a movie. And my eyes were open. So not really like that at all, but you feel what I'm saying. Or maybe you don't, whatever. So last night, I didn't take the what I believe caused the sleep-talking outburst was a melatonin stick of 0.5 milligrams. Last night, I took a Benadryl because I was like, fuck, I got to get on a better sleeping schedule. I'm going to sleep at like 4 a.m. What happens is I'll get in bed at like 9, 10, right? And then we start watching TV, and it's always like, we can't find something. Oh, fuck, we found like 10 things, and now it's 4 a.m. And we have a whole back and forth about falling asleep with the TV on, which I've explored a little bit before, but have you ever had a problem, you and your partner, one of you falls asleep with the TV on, and one of you's right? Not to manipulate the way that question was set up. I get falling asleep with the TV on, but we're talking like loud crime shows. It's like, it's not healthy. When I lived in Brooklyn for a while, I lived across from a police station. And I remember thinking, wow, this apartment is a great deal. What a great price point for this apartment. And then when I went to fall asleep, I heard, whoop, 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 whoop. I think that was just like a gay guy on the street corner. No, I'm just kidding. That was the police sirens, whoop, whoop, all the time. And it started driving me nuts, you know? And I was like, oh, that lying awake, bug-eyed in bed, like, that's why it's such a good deal. So that's what it feels like, trying to fall asleep with this shit. But anyway, took a Benadryl last night, right? I did not have any type of sleep-talking outburst. But what I did do was I got up and we had some fried chicken for dinner. And I remember being like, okay, we had the fried chicken. I had some of it. It was good. And I remember getting up in the middle of the night, going on a tear. And I just remember eating the fried chicken with my hands. There's nothing peculiar or out of the ordinary here. It's just that I was half asleep while I was doing it. And here's what I wanted to tell you. My girlfriend had bought these knockoff Oreo cookies. You know, there's tons of knockoff Oreos. And they never taste as good. Never. Not even close. You're like, oh, fucking, okay. So she got these cookies, knockoff Oreo cookies, also gluten-free. So it's just like chances are, if there's a lineup and you're looking for what's delicious, you're not going to pinpoint that if the other things on the lineup are Oreos. So I'm like, I've looked at these cookies before. I'd walk by, I've been like, fuck those cookies. So last night, in the middle of the night, I get up, I have the chicken, and then I went and I ate two of the cookies. And let me tell you something. I'm so sorry to say this because I feel like I'm committing a betrayal to the country almost, which is a complicated thing. I know that I didn't mean to offend anybody with that, excuse me, but I feel like I'm committing a betrayal. I think that the cookies I ate last night, the two knockoff cookies is from Trader Joe's, knockoff Oreos. I think they were better than Oreos. I don't know what the fuck. And I don't know where to turn with this information. I think they had more frosting than the traditional Oreos. I know Oreo does double stuff and they fuck up a little. They do double stuff. That's good. Then they do, when you do more than the double stuff, the cookie to cream ratio is a little bit off, I find. Even though I love the cream, of course, that's my favorite part. But it's a little bit off when it gets too much. This was perfectly done, more than the double stuff cream, but less than when they do the special triple scruff, triple stuff. Stuffed cream. And it was so fucking good. And I remember I was half awake and it the deliciousness woke me up. The deliciousness woke me. I took a bite. I said, dang. And I woke up and I said, fuck. I felt like I was committing some kind of sin. I feel like it'd be like if I was at like a, I don't know why I'm thinking of Michael John, but say, I mean, not Michael John, Elton John. I was confusing my, I was merging Michael Jackson and Elton John. I was about to say a Michael Jackson impersonator, but as I said that, I went, let's switch lanes on that. It'd be like if I was at an Elton John impersonator concert and I was like, this impersonator's better than the original. Who would you tell? What would you say? I don't know. I'm sorry. I repent. I've been thinking about that. Today's guest is a woman named Regina DiCecco. Regina DiCecco. Now, her last name, if it sounds familiar, maybe you've heard of Regina. She's done a bunch of cool things, worked at SNL. She's the official warm-up comic for The View. She's got a history of working with Whoopi Goldberg, the official warm-up comic for The View, and I'm going to tell you about that in a second. But also her family came over from Italy and started a chain of grocery stores. How fucking cool is that? Oh, that's so cool. And she talks about being a kid, going to the food conventions, seeing the Pepperidge Farm guy. They had the Pepperidge Farm guy, which is obviously an actor. There wasn't an actual guy with a farm like, hi, my name's Pepperidge. That wasn't happening. But I wonder what that actor was like. I bet he was, not to ruin the mystery of it, but I bet that guy was fucking miserable. I bet he had to pep himself up to go to those food conventions where he's the Pepperidge Farm guy welcoming everybody. Because you know he wanted to do something else. He wanted to be like on Days of Our Lives or something. And then he's at a food conventioning. Like, yeah, you like that bread? That sucks. He probably got a bunch of callbacks to other things he was close to. And then fuck, now he's just like, and the money's so good, you can't say no. The money's so good, you can't. I take it, but I probably dig that because I'd be a young choice for Pepperidge Farm. Because the Pepperidge Farm guy, I believe, was older, unless I'm confusing him with that. Who's the guy? I think I'm confusing him with Mr. Clean. Yeah, I have no idea what the Pepperidge Farm guy was like, actually. All right. I retract that. But anyway, so family, grocery store business. Regina sets out. She says, I don't want to do that. I want to do entertainment. They're like, what the fuck? Her and I connect about that because my mom's like, what the fuck? But I've been piecing it together recently. Like, why are you so like thinking what I'm doing is crazy when you opened a fish shop? And she says, what does that have to do with anything? I'm like, I don't know, but I think there's something there. Open a fish shop isn't like the standard trajectory of life. Not that there is one. So Regina, family, opens this grocery store chain. She goes to college in New York. She ends up getting an internship at SNL. And it wasn't in the department she wanted to be in, but she's just trying to get her foot in the door. And through connecting with the cast members themselves started being like, what are you doing? Do you really want to be doing this? And then she moves on from there. You get to hear it in the conversation that we have. And then she becomes the official warm-up comic for The View. Now, my friend and my former roommate, Becca, short for Rebecca, and I went to watch The View taping, and it was really cool. So Becca loves The View, and she was like, she told me, she's like, one of the things on my bucket list is to go see The View. And she said, and I got tickets to it. Do you want to come? She's like, everyone else I know is working during the day. I said, well, I do stuff during the day too. And she was like, that's all good. But I said, yeah, of course, I would like to do that. And then I was like, hey, my really close friend Robin has a close friend that I know her too, who is the warm-up comic for The View. And Becca was like, oh my God, that's awesome. That's so cool. I was like, yeah. So Robin was like, why don't you hit up Regina and just tell her you're coming? And I was like, I don't know. I felt almost like nervous about it. I was like, all right, I don't want to bug her, but all right. So I hit her up. I'm like, I'm coming. She's like, oh, cool. I'll come find you. So what they do when you go see The View, when you're in the live studio audience, you wait outside in like a long line that is totally not social distancing. So this will be changed till we have a vaccine. You wait in this really long line and you have to get there because tons of people have tickets. So you could get there at a certain time. Then they put you in this like holding area. And when we got there, she's like, when you go through the security, tell them that we're friends or tell them that you're there to see me. I'll put your name on a list. So right when we get in, I say, hi, I think my name's on some kind of list. They're like, oh, right this way. And my friend was like, thought it was so cool. We got the total VIP experience right when we got there. you know, we got to go sit up front. She was like, let me know if you have any questions. Regina came out, really hooked us up. And my friend, I don't watch The View, so this was a, it was a little, it was nice to not have to wait in line. It was nice to get to sit right up front. But I was, the VIP treatment to my friend was like, she was like, this is awesome. And it was really cool. I made eye contact with Meghan McCain about 87 times. I think she has pretty big boobs. I don't know. You didn't hear it from me. Maybe I'm wrong. It was where my eye line was. I'm not being a dirtbag. It was where my eye line was. You know, that was inappropriate. I'm very self-conscious today. I'm putting everything on the fact that I'm taking a break from my ADD pills. You know, I don't know what's what. It's a fun conversation. I need to warn you. My microphone was not working. So it's just Regina talking. No, my microphone was not working. So I had to use the computer mic and the sound sounds funny. I'm going to do everything I can to smooth it out. I do everything I can to smooth it out, but the sound sounds a little bit funny. I'm smoothing it out. So that's the deal. So if you're like, I get very agitated by bad sound quality, it's not bad per se, but it's not an Oreo cookie or even an Oreo knockoff cookie. It's more like, it's like there's like a party grab bag and there's like Oreos in it, Skittles in it, all that, and pretzels, but also chocolate covered pretzels, which I also love. But you're going for an Oreo, you get a chocolate covered pretzel. That's kind of what happens. Please rate and review the show on iTunes. Please, for the love of God. Also, you can support the show. If you support the show on, it should pop up when you go on the Anchor app. You can make a monthly contribution. I'm going to be putting that back into hiring professional sound editors and getting more help with stuff. So I greatly appreciate it. No pressure here or there. And yeah, here's my conversation with Regina.
It is what it is.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. Let me do a little intro for you.
Perfect.
Do I say your last name DeChico or DeChecco?
DeChico.
I'm talking to comedian, actress. She went to Barnard College, performed alongside Whoopi Goldberg, and does warm up for the TV show The View. You might have heard of it. She's the, I don't want to say silent partner, but she's the silent member of DeChico and Sons grocery chain, Regina DeChico.
Hey, Emma.
How you doing?
Good. Oh, no, you know, excited to use this microphone.
It sounds phenomenal.
Great, great. Real game changer. I just told Emma I had this mic in my room the whole quarantine. Just use it for the first time now. Day 100. I finally...
It's been 2 weeks where all my technology has been just totally screwed. Because other than that, I'd been fine. And then I got locked. It's my fault. I locked myself out of the Instagram account.
Right.
And then this, but it is what it is. So you grew up in the Bronx, but most of the grocery stores were in Westchester?
Yes. So born in the Bronx, but then when I was 2 years old, my parents moved to Rockland County. So that's where I spent high school. All my schooling was Rockland County.
Why do you think they were attracted to the grocery store business? That seems like one of those businesses that is so hard to even picture getting into. It seems like a very cutthroat business.
I think the one thing that they thought about is they were like, no matter what, people always need food. Unlike a restaurant, you know what I mean? Where it's like, that's a luxury and you need money. And it's funny now because I would always be like, okay. But then with this pandemic, it was just really funny because I would talk to my brother and like my whole life, you know, same with you. I'm like, well, here I am home. There's nothing we can do. And he was like in overdrive, like being crazy. And then I was like, well, I'm going to take a nap after this nap. So I was like, maybe they were onto something with this food business.
You're circling back many years later. Just so you guys know, I know you've already proved it to yourself. I see what you're doing. Good. Good.
You were onto something. Good work, Dean.
Did you consider working for the family business?
All during high school, I worked. There was a store in New City where I was growing up. So I did that the whole time. But there was nothing about it I don't think that I could get passionate about. That, you know, I was sort of like, okay, this is great and makes sense. But I was like, if I had to do this every day, I wouldn't be able to go to work. You know, and like my brother finds new products. Like they all found their own thing. But I was like, I don't know what my thing would be.
So they get to go to conventions and try.
Yeah, they do. They go to, and which I did growing up, that was like one of the big highlights. We'd go to this one upstate and you'd be like, a hot dog and a bagel. Don't mind if I do. You would have it years and years ago. Or new cookies, or you'd get all these free samples. And then they would have celebrities like Elsie the Cow, but food celebrities.
Who's Elsie the Cow?
There's a brand of milk, or the Pepperidge Farm guy would be there. I don't know if you remember,
no
like
way.
Pepperidge Farm remembers, like that guy was there and he would like sign autographs. Like,
what? Who's the Pepperidge Farm guy? Is an actor, right?
I don't know what his real name is. I don't even think I ever looked him up because I was little, but I just remember in the commercial, it was like Pepperidge Farm, remember? And he had his suspenders on. He had an Orville Redenbacher kind of look.
I wonder if he liked his life. Because on the one hand, he's making a lot of money, but on the other hand, I'm sure he wanted to be an actor.
I feel like even though us, it's like, I would never. Also, I would sell out. Like, you know?
Totally. I had this audition one time to be the toilet paper fairy. Have you ever seen those commercials? It's Sparkle.
Sparkle?
Yes. Yeah.
That's because, well, the first girl that did it, Tracy Petrillo Smith, she was in my improv group.
Really?
She was a Sparkle fairy. And then when her renegotiation came around... They were like really not doing well by her. And she's like, forget it. And she left the Sparkle family. And then there was a new person. That's hilarious.
I auditioned for it. I think I had 15 rounds in the audition and it was down to me and one other woman, but it was so crazy. It was me. And then this woman who could sing really well. She was probably in her 40s, straight black woman. And they had us and we would go in and she would do something and I would do something. And we were so different. We're so different. And we did it so many times. And then they just decided to not go with either of us.
That is hysterical. It was really funny because then after that campaign, she took a little break to find herself because she could, because it went well as the Sparkle Fairy.
Oh, but it was very lucrative because I remember thinking, and they also wanted you to do public appearances, which is what made me think of that. They wanted you to represent the brand. It was basically like, that's all you had to do. And I would have done it. I definitely would have.
Of course. And she did it and it was wild. And then it was like, they were like, oh, we want to renegotiate. And then all of a sudden they were back and she's like, no. This isn't how this works. So it's crazy. That's so funny. I know the Sparkle.
I wanted it bad too. That's crazy that she got it.
Would have been one of those things where I would have known it was a brand, but then I would hear it and then it was Tracy and then it was like a little tutu ensemble.
Yes. The Pepperidge Farm guy. What would he do? Would he have to pass stuff out or would he sign autographs?
Sign autographs. And they were like signed pictures of him and then he would personalize it. So he had them printed. He had his glossies ready to go, Emma. He would just personalize it. And then you'd be like, wow. It was so, but we were young. This was the closest thing to celebrities. I don't even know. So you just get like really excited.
That was probably just what you do.
Right. And I remember once in a while I would bring a friend with me to check out this convention. I think it was at the Concord, the place was called. And it was like Halloween, but with real food.
Was she impressed?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, because everybody loves free stuff, let's be honest. So it's like, oh my God, bags and bags of stuff. And then we just run around and eat and grab stuff.
Was it like, have you done those college conventions where they walk around and buy a comedian? Is it like that, but you're the buyer?
Yes. But it was food. And you would see how even comics that would bring food, it would always work better for them.
Those conventions, you stand at a booth and people walk by and decide if they want to buy you. But the buyer has all the power. Yeah. People must have known you were someone's kid.
Right. But yeah, no, the conventions are always so tough. That's when I wished I was a magician or something at like NACA, because you'd see people be like, here's my business card and it's on fire. And then we'd be like, hey,
right.
Do you like that showcase? What do you want from me?
I can't compete with this fucking guy literally pulling rabbits out of his hat, standing there like a dope. Yeah, it's a pretty cool trick.
Yeah. You're like, I guess I don't have any trick.
What kind of school did you go to growing up?
A public high school. I'm like, God, what kind? I was like, I don't know why that seems like such a funny question. I think we're like 330 in my graduating class, which I assumed everybody did the same kind of thing. And then when I got to Barnard, some people would be like, oh, there were 20 people in my graduating class or like 10 people. And I'm like, I don't understand your words. What do you mean? How could there be 10 people in your class?
It's so weird because when you grow up with something, that's just how it is. If like you have Wawa's where you are?
No, but I know Wawa's from doing colleges.
Okay, so me too. But when I first was like, what's a Wawa? People were like, you don't.
Oh, yeah.
Have a Wawa. They get pissed. And you're like,
yes. Everything. It's everything. And then it's funny because in Pennsylvania, I always like Sheet. That was the other like gas station place.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one. Thank you.
And then sometimes at those schools, I'd be like, you guys like Wawa or Sheets? But Sheets, what I would like. And you go up to a kiosk and you order through a kiosk and you could literally make whatever you want. So if it's a burger, you'd be like, let's put mozzarella sticks on it and onion. Ooh. Like you could go insane and there's no judgment because it's a kiosk. So you're not, you don't have to tell someone. You're just all by yourself. Wawa's a different experience, but people are obsessed. They love the Wawa. You have to know. You have to be looped in when you do those schools.
Barnard's a small women's college. Did you think about going outside of New York or do you wanted to stay with your family?
I think I knew I liked a city. So growing up, I was like 40 minutes north of the city. So it was always easy to get to the city. And I think part of me to leave that or to do less, like a sort of like small town experience didn't interest me. I liked that it was Manhattan. And I'd never lived in the city before, even though I was in college. So I felt like it was just very appealing. And it wasn't that far.
Your family was probably, I'm just assuming because of a a family business. I'm basing it off nothing other than that, but it seems like they're pretty close.
Yes. No, it was funny because when I went, my parents dropped me off 40 minutes from where they live.
Right.
My mom was a mess and she was crying. I have a younger brother and he was a mess, and they stopped and ran to a family friend. And this family friend had literally fought in the Vietnam War. And he was like, I don't think my family cried this much when I left for Vietnam. He was like, you guys, she's 40 minutes away. It was like an emotional, dramatic experience for my family. And I like,
is that an Italian thing?
I think so. So it has to be together. And then my mom and her sister married my dad and his brother. Two sisters married two brothers.
What?
Yeah. So it's fine. It's like a legal thing. Oh, it takes a second to think about.
My grandmother married my grandfather's brother after he died. It's different, but it takes a second.
Right.
In his late 80s, when he died, then they got married. But wow. So it was your two sets of sisters married two sets of brothers?
Yes. There's two sisters married two brothers. And then, so then that was like kind of like, we always call them like double cousins. So like we were with them for like every holiday because it's like we had this grandparents. And then obviously like ever, so like that was like, we were like, it was like very, I guess maybe that you can sort of say was like incestuous, just in that we were together all the time. Like, cause sometimes people would be like, oh, who's coming to dinner? And I would be like, oh, just the eight of us.
Right.
Cause it was like two complete families. And people would be like, do you understand that's not a normal, like it shouldn't be like just the eight of us. But like, that was like just another part of my, like, I'm like, oh, well, we're always together. So
are they still together? Cause that would probably be a lot of pressure.
They are. Okay. They're all complicated otherwise, you know, Emma.
Could you imagine? I mean, yeah, I couldn't even. So when you went away, was that when you started getting interested in entertainment, or were you always interested in it?
I would do the plays in school. I did in second grade. It was Dr. Seuss's Horton Hatches the Egg. I think it's the egg. And then it was just funny. So the teacher asked like who wanted to be Horton, which was like really the only speaking part. Mm. And like everyone raises their hand but me. And then like she was like, oh, Regina. And I'm like, not how this works, Mrs. Pola. Like, not interested. But she wanted me to do it. Like, she thought it was funny. This is an instance of a teacher seeing sort of my potential before I saw it. And then I did that. And then I was like, oh, and I was doing voices. Yeah. And then it opened up. And then I was like, okay. And then I like would do plays. And then I wanted to be a serious actress. Like, we did the Diary of Anne Frank in high school.
Oh, boy.
I know. Argo, the older sister. And I was really like, this is amazing. People can see my range. Making up things in my head. Like, who was even watching this career? Because it was
Right.
I'm like, wait until everyone sees this.
I'm not getting pigeonholed now. Yeah. They can see. I'm not sticking to, you're like turning things down. You're like, I can't do that. I can't play the same type of role twice. It's just not. Yes.
So there was like a lot more going on in my head. And then we did Stage Door was another play that we did later in high school.
There was a girl.
So she actually, in the play, she committed suicide at the end of the first act. And I really thought this would show the people how amazing I was. And I really wanted this part so badly. And the director, it was a husband and wife team that would direct. And they pulled me aside during auditions. And they were like, Regina, what are you, like, you're funny. Just please do a funny part. And I was like, no, but that's easy. Like, no, I have to do this. Like, people have to see what I'm capable of. And then they were the first people that said to me, you think being funny is easy because you're good at it. But so they were like, stop fighting that. Because in my head, you know, the same thing. It's like, we always want to challenge ourselves sometimes. And sometimes we forget, no, maybe if you have a gift, go with that a little bit and see what happens. So like when they said that, I'm like, huh? And they're like, it's hard to be funny. And I was like, don't understand. And they're like, no, like, let somebody else die at the end of the first act. Stick with this.
Did you get in trouble for being funny? Maybe it can equate being in trouble for being loud or something.
I was always in trouble for being loud. But it just, you know, and I was like, I'm not being loud on purpose. I did get one time, I remember I got kicked out of, I did band. I played the clarinet and I did like orchestra. Oh,
the clarinet's a tough one. I played that for 2 days.
I wasn't really good at it. So I'm not sure why I played it in so many different things. But one time we were doing it in band and this was concert band. So we're all sitting. I also did marching band. But the guy that played the tuba was a very skinny guy and he fell backwards off the platform with the tuba. And I laughed so hard. Like I had to get removed. I was removed. And he was fine. But to me, it was so perfectly comical that I was like, but does anyone understand how amazing? Like it's a skinny guy and a giant horn.
Get it?
I'm like,
she's evil.
Yeah. Thank God. He was fine. But you know, I would get in trouble a lot for talking. I would get separated from people. But you just find someone else. It's like, I just need a new, I guess saying it out loud to you for the first time, it's like, oh no, I just need a new audience. Put me with new people. That's funny. I never thought of that until I said it just out loud to you. But that person was the audience. And it's totally. Like, oh, is this funny to you? More. And then it was like, oh, Regina, change your seat again.
Right. When they say we can't seat you next to your friend or something, right. You're like, I'm not even friends with this motherfucker. I'm just talking. You can't shut me up. And like, I remember in kindergarten, there was a kid named Adam Cousins who had never spoke before. So his mom was like, will you put him with Emma just in case it'll maybe get him to talk? And by the end of it, he did say something, but I don't know what, my mom loves that story, but he probably said, be quiet. Like, he was probably like,
that's so funny. It's funny, when I was talking about the double cousins, my cousin Chris, who's 2 years younger than me, he was a late talker. And we would go, and for some reason, we'd all go to the pediatrician together, which doesn't make sense, like why we did all these activities as a big group. But we go to the pediatrician and they were like, Chris isn't talking. And they knew he understood, because if you told him to do something, he would do it. But he was like, he doesn't have to talk. And the pediatrician was like, also, he's with Regina all the time. What's the point of trying to speak? I got laryngitis once. And I remember the pediatrician.
Ooh, he was roasting you.
The pediatrician was hysterical because he was like, Regina has laryngitis. Also, because I think I was the kind of patient, I would ask a million questions. One time, my cousin John had stepped on a nail through his shoe. And then it was, so anyway, so he had me use a hammer to pull the nail out. And
the
then it was like only in a little bit. And then he needed a tetanus shot. And we all again went to the doctors together.
Right.
And then after he got the tetanus shot, I was like, oh, when do the reporters show up? And the doctor was like, well, and I was like, well, I think you heard the story about me getting the nail out. I'm sure any second now, like the paper must be on the, I was always like, guys, this is a huge deal.
This is a press moment. I'll pose with the hammer again. We can reenact it. Matter of fact, whack.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, Jesus God.
I need a press release. I think this is going to be huge. Come on. Yeah.
How would you deal with not getting parts or in high school? Because I never auditioned for any plays in high school, but I feel like that would be really hard to do that process like that young.
I guess it was. The dramas, I would usually get a part. And a lot of times in the musical, because I'm not a singer, I wouldn't get a part. And I would always find a way. I would be in the chorus. So we did, I would find a way to still call attention to myself.
Right.
So we did Cinderella in high school and I was one of the townspeople and they wanted you to ad lib because you're like so excited. Like the prince was giving a ball. Opening night, we were doing our dancing and then everyone's ad-libbing and I was like, the prince is giving a ball. And I was like, great. I love balls. So I would just do nonsense where then it was not for the audience as much as I wanted to make everybody else on stage.
Right. Correct.
So I would do a lot of that too. Still just calling attention. Like, over here, look at me.
Did you do theater when you got to Barnard?
No, I actually auditioned for an improv team because I had sort of been introduced to improv and I did not make it. I didn't get on the improv team, but I'd also never done improv in my life. I just sort of heard about it for the first time.
It's so not easy. It's hard because the first time I ever auditioned for improv, I didn't do improv either. And it was the worst audition of my life. I didn't know it would be that hard. I didn't get it. It was awful.
You know, it's a totally like different team. And then I wound up studying it. I took classes at Upright Citizens Brigade. And then I actually did improv before I did stand up.
I was reading that.
Yeah.
Which definitely doing improv before stand up definitely benefits the stand up. When you did the improv audition, how did it go before you had practiced improv?
Oh, it was probably a disaster. Because one, I was never used to anything being a team. God only knows what I did at the audition, because I want to say it was probably at Columbia, the Columbia improvisers. And then who knows? It was probably terrible.
Right.
Like, I think a friend made me go with her and I think I thought it was like fun and silly, but you know, sometimes you're like, what are we doing? I'm sure it was terrible.
That's how it seems with improv auditions, because it seems like they're improvising.
Yes.
But there's rules. So you ended up getting on a team were you at Barnard when you got on the team through?
Oh, no. That came later. That came after college. Then I was done with improv, didn't make it on this team, forget it. And then it was after college. I wound up taking level one at UCB. And then that's how it started to, even after, this was like a while after college, now they think about it, actually probably a decent while after college, but I think it was sort of that thing of you just sort of kind of want to start performing again. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it's like I'd done the plays, I'd like gone away from it for a while, I interned at Saturday Night Live, worked at Saturday Night Live, and
so
then
you were
like
still interested in entertainment.
Yes.
What were you studying at Barnard, like for your major?
English. I was an English major. So I think I kept telling my parents, I was like, I'm gonna be a lawyer, don't worry. And then I would just intern in television. I interned at Nickelodeon Magazine, the weekend edition of the Today Show. Like I interned at SNL like after I left. I think it was, who are you lying to, Gina?
Would they ask you questions like, why aren't you interning at a law firm?
And then I think I would try to be like, that come later. You know what I mean? Like, I'll just do this now and then that law stuff will be later. And then it never happened.
It's interesting it's interesting too, because starting a grocery store chain seems like that would be, that's a real dreamer thing to do. Because to be like, I'm going to start a grocery store chain is like, what? Because my mom started a fish shop, fish, F-I, like where she sold fish. But with me starting comedy, she was like, that's insane. What are you doing? But only recently, as last therapy session, when I was talking about my mom starting a fish shop, I was like, it's strange that she was so against the comedy when she starts at a fish shop. Were your parents supportive of you doing the comedy? Or how into it were they wanting you to be a lawyer versus how much they were into you wanting to do stand-up?
Well, one, actually, just listen to you now. That's such a funny thing to say, because it's like they did do the American dream.
And they came over from Italy, right?
Yeah. So like my dad and his brother, they were not born here. They did it. And then I think at some point I was saying to them, like, but now this is my American dream.
Right.
Kind of a thing. And I think just for them, because it was so foreign to the industry for them. And I think the thing was, if I went into groceries, like if I went into any kind of supermarket business, they could help. They had the connections, they'd done the legwork. And I think it was like, Regina, if you go down this path, you're alone. We don't know anybody. We can't help you.
Right.
Because I think they were almost like, we started from nothing and have something. And we're like, have something. And you're like, nope, I'm going to go back to nothing. So I think that it was like that mental struggle of them being like, oh, why would you want to do this? And then it was like when they came from Italy, my dad and his family, and there were seven of them, I think, they were in a room and a half in like Soho.
Wow.
Like it was all warehouses. They were like North Broadway and Prince. They were down there. They didn't even have like a full bathroom. Like all the big kids had a shower at the YMCA.
Wow.
Everybody got out of the city. And then I'm like, I'm going back in the city. I'm going to start like... Even though the city had changed a lot, so we can't really say it's the same thing.
Right.
But they were like, we need lawns and suburbs. And look at your beautiful high school with this field. And I'm like, grass over it. Like,
right.
So I just like started. So I think it was just knowing they couldn't help me, I think was the tough thing. So then I would always bring them, like they would come to Saturday Night Live. Whatever I worked on, I would make them a part of it. So they would sort of see how it was like, oh, okay. Like she's doing something.
Right.
We're not sure what or how this happens, but okay, she's doing something.
Did they like going to Saturday Night Live?
Of course. Yeah. Right. No, my dad always loved Saturday Night Live. My mom said when they were first married, he would watch it. And she was like, this show is so stupid. So then she said for her, the fact that I wound up there and then I think that my dad was like obsessed. So they would come and they loved coming. And then also it was funny, my brother and my cousin, Chris, that I mentioned before, they would come sometimes and they would come to the after parties and the after parties.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that was. So at one point they were like, what if you keep this job forever and we just supplement your income? Like they didn't want to stop. They were like, this is the best thing. Like somehow this needs to keep going. And we realized
that's so funny.
Probably not a living wage. And like, I used to think I was making good money. And then my dad was like, did you ever average like what you make versus how many hours you're working? Mm. He was like, this is terrible.
I remember my friend's dad who has a business. He looked at some college I was doing and he it was kind of weird that he asked to look at it, but he was like, can I just see? And he looked and he was like, so how far do you have to travel? How much is a ticket? And he was like, okay, so you're not really making that much money. And I was like, I mean, when you do the math, no. But if you just look at the isolated number, it's not bad. But yeah, you fucking do all that stuff. Sure. I see what I get what you're saying. What were you doing when you were at Saturday Night Live? Like what kind of stuff?
I was actually an assistant in the design department. So the set design department. And that was like not what I studied, which was crazy. But I was able to intern in that department and they kept me on. And even though I didn't know a lot about set design, and then they taught me how to like dress sets and like do all this stuff. I had always been such a huge SNL fan that they were, I brought my own stuff to the table. You know what I mean? Like they were never going to, I was never going to draw a set, but like there was enough where it's like, she seems to be aware. She really loved the show.
Because set design's like a whole thing. Like that's
Yes. Oh, for sure. People like, yeah. The girl who did it after me, like she went to NYU and that was what she studied.
Right.
Like, and then maybe she would pursue that. But like I was a wild card.
What kind of set is she going to design today?
Yeah. It was like, no, nothing. I learned a lot of fun stuff. Like when you dress a set, you have the three walls. And then when you go to put a light switch in a room where it doesn't exist, you really have to think about it. Cause you're like, wait, is it here? Like, does it go here? So it was like that kind of stuff that I would learn. Like, okay, like a basic. So the sconces would always go up first. And then the light fixtures the wall,
A
wall mounted one. Cause obviously if it's anything is on the ceiling, there is no ceiling. You're not going to see it.
So right.
Like wall mounted sconces. And then it was like, oh, the picture's on the wall. And then it's funny. Sometimes I would fit like dress a set and then they'd go to shoot the sketch. And then the sketch would be like in the corner of the room. That there wasn't anything.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, is that what the shot is? Sorry.
I did it over here. They're like,
yeah.
It's outside the building. You're like,
ugh. Don't you guys think it'd be funnier though on this wall? Wouldn't it be funnier if the sketch was here? But that was just a while. I didn't know anything about that. And then I did that. And then when I interned at Saturday Night Live, that was Horatio Sanz was in the cast.
Yes, I loved him. I've never like watched the show regularly, but there's certain characters I would watch clips because of him. And then actually Chris Redd, I will watch his clips.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Actually, I watched Pete Davidson's too.
That was awesome. Yeah. So Horatio, at one point, he was like, what do you want to do to me? And then I was like, because he said to me, he got the sense that I was getting really good at a job that I didn't want.
Interesting that he observed that.
Yeah. And I guess because too, like, I would be, you know what I mean? I would like be loud there. I was still me.
Right.
So I guess you could kind of see like, what is this one up to? So he was just funny because he was like, ultimately, what would you want to be doing? And I said, well, kind of what you're doing. And then he said, what are you going to do about it? So he signed me up for a class at UCB.
Whoa, that's amazing.
So he was like, he's like, Regina, you have to start. He's like, you're just going to get better and better at this job and you're not going to leave. And the crazy thing about SNL is, and obviously it's amazing, but so many people there have been there for almost the run of the show. Some lighting guys, some camera guys, the boom operator. Like when you hear, and then some of the prop guys, they're there, but they started there with their dad not leaving. But it's almost like, it's like a very crazy thing. Like I became close with when I was working there because this is like more complicated than it needs to be, but my boss there was doing work with Bonnie and Terry Turner, who had written Wayne's World.
Oh,
and
cool.
Tommy Boy. And they did like Third Rock from the Sun of that 70s show. And they had started by writing it Saturday Night Live. And I was talking to Bonnie one time about being at SNL. And she said, it's amazing because Lorne like watches over you. So she said, if it's raining, he keeps you under the umbrella. But then she was like, but also that means sometimes when the sun's out, like you're not going to get the sun. So it was one of those, like they were able to see, like, it's amazing, but you do like, you know, that's why people do like, you have to break out. And even though I was so much lower on the totem pole, like he was like, why would you leave here? Like it's, and it was amazing. You know what I mean? Like I said, you're going to the parties. You're like, it's like, and that's when I knew I love live television because it felt important. I love that if something happened live on air and it screwed up, like it was real. Like I loved that.
Would you get nervous watching it happen? I figured out how to make it happen quicker.
I love it. I love it.
Would you get nervous watching the live shows?
No, it was kind of fun because at that point there was nothing I could ever do. So you sort of like would sit back and relax. So that was fun. I'm trying to think of the one big flub I was there for. Why am I blanking on her name? It was like the big lip sync flub.
Oh,
that happened on Saturday Night Live.
Was that Ashley? Yeah.
Yes. So I was there for that.
Ooh,
I was there
for that. And did you get secondhand embarrassment?
No, I know, because I think in the back of my head, I wanted to be there for something crazy.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Also, if it's someone, it probably depends who the celebrity is. Like if it's if it's some celebrity who, you know, has an amazing voice or I can see how.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon after that, Ashley Simpson, that video of her being like god awful at the McDonald's came out.
Right.
Yeah. But did it start skipping or something?
It was like she said she pressed the wrong button, but then it was like, I think she was just lip syncing to the wrong track. But then we were like backstage watching in the office and we saw it start to happen and we're like, and then it was funny because Maya Rudolph like having to walk in the office and she was like, what the fuck? Like everything was like in slow motion and we're like, no. And it was crazy. And I remember they just said to her, just like, don't mention it like during the good nights, you know, and they're like, thanks for coming, everybody.
Right.
It was like, don't say it. When it goes like on the East Coast, like the West Coast feed, they could just like play the dress rehearsal clip. And then it was almost like, I think they were just like, we'll just bury it and it's done. And then they get to the good nights. And I don't remember who hosted. They're like, thanks for having us. And then she was like, my drummer pressed the wrong button. And then everyone's like.
What fucking button can she say that he's, first of all, he's got two drumsticks in his hand. So he's drumming. And then she's like, my drummer put the wrong words in my mouth. Like,
so it's just like a really, but I remember that night, then like I went out to the party and I was supposed to go to a wedding. I remember thinking like, I'm not going to go out tonight. I have that wedding tomorrow. And then it was like, we were like raging. And then I almost like went from the after party, like to the wedding parties. Like what happened? Like we didn't care about the bride or groom.
They're like, whose wedding is it? The groom's up there like, Regina, what happened Ashley Simpson, did she go to the party?
I don't think she did. No. So I think right away it was like, you had what they told you the instructions. If she did, maybe just the first one. But I feel like, I think because at that point you do get like, everybody wanted to help you. Like they were trying to help. And like, you were like, no, I got this. And you like made it worse. But it was fun in that way that like, I wanted one of those moments. And then I was like, I got it.
Right. At what point did you end up leaving SNL?
So when I interned there, it was Will Ferrell's last season. And then when I worked there, it was Kristen Wiig's first season.
Ooh, I always forget that she did that.
Yeah. So it was like,
she's cool.
On and off. Like,
she's awesome.
Yeah, she was awesome. And it was exciting because she was new. So like, I feel like she would ask like me questions and it's like,
really?
Who am I? Just because like, oh, I'm a new person. And like, right. You seem to be hearing people know you. Like, and she was like great and sweet. And then it was like amazing to watch her just like rise to the top.
Could you tell when you saw her start? Were you like, oh, she's something's going to happen here?
Yeah. Because I think it also depended on like when you came into the fold.
Right.
Like, I remember Rob Riggle did his one season of Saturday Night Live.
I had no idea he was ever on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, so he did one season, but when he came in, it was like everybody had been there for a while. They were like, were doing their thing, and it was like a talented guy trying to like sneak in to like an existing. So you could sort of tell, like, and he would like just try, and they'd write these sketches, and it would be funny, and it just wouldn't make it to air. And like, I just remember thinking, had he come in another season, I bet he would have had a totally different SNL story. But it also depends, like, who's on your season, and if it's like other people that are just gonna like dominate because they've been dominating, you know, it's like, oh, that's what happened. So I just, he did one season, and I remember feeling really sad because it was like he was such a nice guy, and he was so funny. But it was like, hey, you couldn't break into that existing thing. And then when I would see him in movies and stuff, I'd be like, yeah, bro.
Right. He
like,
made it.
You did it.
I forget that they have sketches. So they rehearse the sketches and they film they'll film them. So then when they play those sketches, those aren't live happening.
I mean, they have some pre-tape stuff, but like, so 8 to 10, they do a dress rehearsal of the entire show.
Oh.
But that's 2 hours.
Right.
And then between dress rehearsal that ends at 10 and when they go live at 11:30, they make additional, they cut complete sketches. And then that's the last time they make sketches. They make changes. Like
who
that
decides?
Would be on the cue cards.
Who decides what gets cut?
I want to say ultimately Lorne, but then I think it's like the head writers and stuff. So it's like a very intense, like just waiting to see what happens.
Right. Watching it in real time.
Yeah. So it's, it's fun. Yeah.
You're out. Did you have boyfriends during this time or were you just focused on your career?
No, I like didn't even have a career. It was just funny. I had a job.
And I didn't have a career.
There's never been a like, and that's when I was focusing on my career.
Well, working at SNL was probably very time consuming.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was crazy. Like,
so even if it's an internship, it's still,
Oh yeah. And I interned like full time. So the girl that I was interning for when I interned there, she was like, oh, you can come in at 10 o'clock tomorrow. And
right.
I was like, great. And the head of the department or one of the heads, he was like, oh, well, I come in at 8 a.m. because I'm serious about my job. What time are you going to come in?
There's always that like, one motherfucker. And you're like, you're bumping it up for everybody.
Right. Yeah. So I was like, I guess 8 a.m. And then Rebecca, who had hired me, she was like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So then I wound up just like, she didn't, what could she do? So then I interned the 70-hour work week. And then that's eventually like what I worked too.
Right.
So it was like a very fun. And it was funny because I did it. It was my first semester after Barnard. So it wasn't even for credit. Like when I interned there, I was at a school and it was like the first thing I did. And then they would like laugh because like, they were like, oh, should we sign Regina's forms and like Regina's paperwork? Cause it didn't exist.
Right.
But I think now that would probably be illegal. I don't like, cause now I don't think you could have an intern that's like not getting credit. I don't even know. I was definitely a loophole. I got in at a good time where it was a loophole. I don't think it would happen now.
Yeah, there was something because in fashion, something happened. I know what you're talking about. There was, and I had a cousin who was an intern for like a really long fucking time for a guy who made high-end gloves. He was like made these like gloves that were like thousands of dollars. And my cousin was interning for him making like $3 an hour or something fucking.
Right.
Where you're like, nah, that doesn't make any sense. So after you were at SNL, how long was it between when you started then and when you started working at The View?
Oh, a long time. Because I want to say, when was The View? Like 2008? Yeah, no, it could almost been like 10 years, maybe. So then in between, like I was at SNL, I left SNL. Whoopi Goldberg had a sitcom on NBC called Whoopi. And I was the assistant to the executive producers on that show.
Is that when you first met Whoopi Goldberg?
Yes, that was when I first met. So that was like kind of the only, not one of the only good things, but obviously going into a situation to audition for a job at The View, knowing Whoopi Goldberg is a big, because I think I could understand, like for a lot of people, I feel like you'd be like, what? Like, but it was kind of like, oh, hey. And then it was very funny because then the crew, like So then my very first day auditioning, she like literally said, she was like, did you tell them you know me, like to the audience? And then the crew's like, excuse me.
Ooh, like, that looks good.
Yeah.
Because you hadn't like, told them?
What? No, I didn't tell anybody. Oh,
money shot. Because then it's like, who else does she know?
Right.
You didn't say that you know Whoopi Goldberg in the setting where it's her fucking spot. So they're like, you're like,
so
yes.
So then she brought it up. So then it was like,
hell yeah.
So then everyone was just like, excuse. It's been funny because of SNL. I've had those moments at The View. Mm. So then like Amy Poehler came on The View and it happened like my birthday. And she was like, oh my God, wait. So like
Regina.
She came over. Yeah. So it was cute. And then John Lithgow.
Yes.
He was at The View. And then he was like very funny because he's so dramatic. Like it always seems like he's on stage. So then like I was saying like, oh, John Lithgow. And he was like leaving and he was like, Regina, you know, and then he was, he was just like, nobody told me you were working here.
Right.
And like, he had this, like, he gave me like a big hug and like, it was, and then like all the ladies at the table were just like,
Yeah. Like, John, why would they have told you specifically? Like, just so you know, when you walk in.
So it was just like such a, so like those moments have been fun when like worlds collide and it's like, oh, I knew you from like my old, and then actually some camera guys, it's funny. Some camera guys that were at ABC are now at like, or were at NBC or ABC. And then I'll see people and it's like, oh my God, wait a minute.
Right.
So it's like, it's because it is a small, I mean, it's a small industry, people that are working. So it's like, people do know, obviously people at The View know people from SNL from, or whatever. It's a small enough world.
When you audition at SNL, do you have to do the audition in front of the, I mean, not SNL, sorry. When you do the audition for The View, do you have to do it for the women on The View?
You just do the job. The audition is the job.
So they're there?
So the whole show is there. The audience is there. Everybody's there. So it was just, it was
that's
funny
tough.
Because, yeah, I got there. I want to say, because the show goes live at 11. I think I showed up 9 that first time. And they like walked me through backstage. And thankfully, because of Saturday Night Live, like I was so used to being on a set. So like backstage studio, I was like, got it. Like that was comfortable.
Which is it is very disorienting because if you've never been on a set before, it is very odd to see these I mean, it's like, I remember in Crazy Ex, it was in this giant warehouse at CBS Studios, but a lot of times there's other productions happening. So you'll see like, you know, a half made like doctor's table. And then over here is the store. And then there was where the restaurant was, but sometimes the restaurant, the other part of it is like a bedroom or so there's not, and The View would be very different, but it's like very, there's just this like energy and there's all these, like all the props and all that stuff. I would imagine if you hadn't been around that, it would be like, whoa, what? You're just like looking or overwhelmed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So then you're like, I know this is backstage.
Right.
I know that's the stage.
Right.
So yeah. So it was like, they introduced me to like the crew guys, you know, some of like all the prop guys and I'm like talking with them. And I was like, oh, because at The View, basically I was with the crew most of the time. It was like mostly crew, like a little bit of cast, mostly crew. So then I was like, crew, I love a crew. Give me more crew.
Right.
And then they like talked me through everything. And then they would be like, oh, and then that's when, you know, you tell them like to put their cell phones away or like whatever. So like I went up and I was like, oh, when does the guy make the announcements about the cell phones and stuff? And they were like, Regina, that's you now.
Right.
You do it. And I was like, oh, so then we just did. So I just did it. And it's the weirdest, because there were a lot of people that I would say like, oh, I really want to do audience warm up. And
it's
think
hard.
I'd watch people do it. And I don't think I ever saw someone do it and thought to myself, oh, I want to do that.
Mm.
But then the minute I did it myself, I was like, I want this so bad.
It's hard. It's really, really,
yeah,
it's but really, it's, really it's, hard.
It's I do love it. And I miss it so much, especially now during quarantine. Like that's probably been the hardest part, not doing like not being at The View. So then like, but yeah, no, it was fun. So like I got up, like I'd like talk to people, like you just try to figure out like how much is my shtick? How much am I like talking to people? How much am I interacting? And then it was just wild when then Whoopi was like, you know, then the ladies come out and then she was like, tell them how you know me. And then, you know, like that was like really great. And then just,
that means you did a good job too, because
yeah, it was,
if you hadn't, then she would be like, I mean, I'm sure she wouldn't, because she's probably so nice, but a lot of, you know, if someone, she wouldn't want to be like, let them know we go way back. You know what I mean?
To your point, I feel like that's why the crew would be like, they would like notice what, you know what I mean? Like they were very conscious. So like the crew would be like, oh, and that we saw, and then Whoopi said, so I was like, oh, okay, yeah. So
they had, I can't believe they would have the audition be actually, so they must have, there must have been a vetting period that was pretty intense before they plopped you into that situation.
So I think, though, in a way, they knew that's the only way they would be able to know. So everybody that auditioned would usually get like two shows. So they'd let you do
really?
One and then you'd go back the next. I mean, if it went well enough, but that was what they had told me the process was. And then if they like me, they're like, not that they like me. They said, you'll come in and do it twice. Because they said, listen, there's a learning curve. You have to figure it out.
Sure.
And then I went back like the next day and then did it again. And then they brought me in a while, and then I would do like a week here, a week there. And then I was just like waiting like to find out what happened.
Were you filling in for somebody, or were they?
No, they were already just trying to replace. So it was like, then it came down to like the final three, and then it's like who would do a week, you know, but then they were cute because then like Halloween is always like a really big show. Like they do like a double taping and it takes forever. So the crew would be like, oh, if you're going to be here that week, like that's a good sign.
Right.
Like the crew was great, and that they would give me like positive. They'd be like, no, if you're going to be here following, they're like, it's a big deal. And I was like, oh, is it a big deal? And they're like, no, it's a big deal. And I was like, okay, this is good. Just because like, you don't even know what's good. But like, I knew, I was like, no, I love this. Like it's fun. But with The View is crazy too. Cause then I didn't really know other warm ups. So I've talked to I was talking to Vince August that does Trevor Noah.
I didn't know he did Trevor Noah.
He does Trevor Noah. So then we were just talking, and then like Vince was like, oh, I do 15 up top. And then I was like, oh, and then commercials. And he was like, I don't do commercials. And then he's like, you do commercials? And I'm like, wait, you don't do commercials? So then it was such,
because the guy at Colbert, whose name he goes out during the commercials, and he'll do the commercials.
Yeah,
that's when I went to watch you when I was with my friend who. My friend was like, I love The View. And I was like, I know Regina does a warm up. And when we went and watched while you were on afterwards, and it was so fun to watch the live show, I was like, that's a lot of work. I was like, she was working. Like you were working. Cause it's like, I mean, just I've hosted a million comedy shows, and you're putting hosting stuff. I was like, that wasn't easy. Whose birthday, where you're running around, going up, going down, you know, and then having the women of The View like right behind you is pretty nerve wracking, I would feel.
No, it's, and then especially because The View could get serious. It's like they could like get an argument, or like we could have a really serious topic. So like that's the one thing that like the other shows are like, we're not dealing with that, Regina. No one is ever like, just like, yeah. So like that's the one, but I'm sure you feel the same way too, because there's some shows we could do when you're doing stand up and it's almost so easy that it's not as satisfying. Like we don't want a ridiculous challenge, but like sometimes you just want to overcome a little something so you feel good. So sometimes like when that does happen, I'm like, all right, let's figure out this. Mm-hmm. All right, let's see how we how we deal with this.
Especially to pull the energy back around. Like if it's like some tense thing, tension,
yes.
And then you come in and then make it light again. You're like, I'm of service.
Right. Yeah. So then so that's a lot too. But then even I sometimes like, all right, let's do it. Figure this out.
Are they still, they're still filming now, right?
Yeah. They're all at home though.
Have you been there? Why there's been switches on The View? Why there's been like different people popping?
Co-hosts.
Thank you.
I want to say Abby Huntsman had just started, I think when I started, and she's since left. It was funny because she wound up leaving like right before all this happened, and it's almost like perfect timing. She's like helping her dad run a campaign, like she just had twins, like now she's three kids, and it was like that was a smart move. So that was really the only thing that I've been there for. Otherwise, like the ladies have been there the whole time.
And you did the Democratic, they had you do warm up for the Democratic, was it
the presidential debate, the presidential candidate debate. Yeah, it was very funny because they called like from The View, like, and then they were like, oh, hey, Regina, like, would you be interested in like warming up the crowd, like for the debate, like the Democratic debate? And I was like, for president? And they were like, yeah, it's in like New Hampshire. And I was like, and in my head, I'm like, I do fart jokes. Like, this is not. This doesn't make sense. And once I got there, I found out that like when they had done it, the last debate, like the people are there for a long time. Like they go through security, they make them sit there. Of course, it's like you're wandering around, you're not paying attention. And then I think the last time they did it, the debate just started and people were still like milling around.
Getting oriented.
And it sounded like the cameramen were like, sit down.
Right.
But they're like also trying to film. So they're like, we could use a little help. And then I was like, this is crazy. But yes.
And they hadn't had a comedian.
No, he definitely hadn't. Yeah. He hadn't done a warm up before. So like it was like wild and kind of fun and just trying to figure out like, what are we doing? And it was like funny because it's like, I wasn't being political.
Obviously. Right.
That was very clearly.
Oh yeah. That would be because you couldn't be like pushing someone's agenda.
Yeah.
Like, fuck this guy. Yeah. I love them.
They'd be like, what is she doing?
So I would think the audience would be very, were they very tense? Because aren't they, are they there to be like, I guess maybe they're there to have their mind changed. That's why they're at the debate. They're not necessarily going in like, I want this person.
So it was like, it was St. Anselm College. So then it was like students, which was great. So I feel like everybody like around were like students who were like, we're listening, we're hearing.
Right.
You know, and then I was kind of like, guys, we're a part of history. You know, they're like, yeah. And then like on the floor, it was like much more VIP, you know, big donors in the industry, but then also like the families of the candidates. So that was just kind of a wild, because it's like, you know, Elizabeth Warren's husband's in the front. And then it's like, you just do the thing where you're like, I'm talking. And then it's like, is that cool? Maybe I shouldn't have done that. But okay, here we are.
Did you do crowd work?
A little bit, yeah. Well, it was funny. So the VIPs, they all had their names on their chairs. Mm. So then I could literally say people's names out loud. And then if people knew them, they would like, it was his, and it was literally like, at one point we were waiting for Elizabeth Warren's husband. So like, that was like the big running joke. And I was like, where is he? We can't start. Right. And then we showed up, everyone was like clapping. So it was just like, it's like people like being the center of attention, and right, it doesn't really matter. Like, they love it at The View when you feel like if I make it about them, then it's like their day.
Yes.
And then like, I did it very early on, and that was like how I like sort of learned the lesson. So it was the Veterans Day show, and his name was Alejandro. Mm. And I just kept saying it, and people in the audience were saying it, and we just had so much fun with him.
It becomes a thing.
Wife, yeah, everybody gets involved. Right. And his wife said later, they were walking to their car and people were like, Alejandro, like people from the audience.
Right.
And then it turned into the best day. And I think once you realize like, oh wait, people are coming in excited. So it's like, sure, you're coming here, like, I'm going to keep you here or like get you there. And it's like, people love when it's about them. And it's like, I love to make it about them. And when you pick the right person, like if we have like a pre-tape and then we have extra time and somebody dances, and when that person is like an amazing dancer, like, then it's like everybody loses their mind.
And you can tell they're an amazing dancer just from them dancing in their seat.
Sometimes it's really funny, because like, just like sometimes there's a thing of like, well, like I'm like, someone was wearing stiletto heels. Like, and like, it's like, you couldn't tell, like, you could, I don't know how you get a sense. Like, sometimes it's like someone just gives off a little bit of a vibe, or like one time, yeah. And then it's like, you can just tell. Or then after, literally, it's like, sometimes it'll be insane. Like one time I remember Meghan McCain was like, who was that guy? And then I was like, actually, like, he hosts a drag brunch. Like afterwards, you end up being like, here's my drag name, I host a drag brunch. And it was like, but I didn't know any of that going into it. But then like, just brought that, because Megan was like, that was it. Because sometimes the camera guys would, they could see backstage before the show started.
Right.
And like, the ladies will be like, what went on?
They can just hear it. How much can he dance? Why, or how much can they dance from the seat?
Not so much of this, but then I'll let them get up. If we have the time,
right,
like I'll let them get up and they'll like use, they'll, I let them use the space.
I could, that would be my idea of hell, having to get up and dance.
Oh, sure. But it's funny, because what I know now is performers are performers. So if someone winds up saying they're a dancer, I'm like, or sometimes if people sing, I'm like, would you sing? And they're like, no. Yes. Everybody's literally, performers are just ready to go.
Right.
And it's one guy, he was like at Lincoln Center, like he sang in the opera, and he had been like, I think he was like collecting tickets, and then now is in the opera. It's crazy. He was like, at the Met. And there was like a huge story about him, but I didn't know it was him. And then he started, it's just like, it's wild. Like, you just get these like wild stories.
Could you just hear him start doing an opera? And we're like, okay, who the hell is that?
We were just, because I think he just mentioned it. And then whenever someone mentions it, and then I'm like, would you want to sing now? And then literally that's when we always get them to go from like no to yes.
Right. Like, absolutely not. I'm not ready. I couldn't. Yeah. I'll be right there.
Let's go. And like, and what do you guys want to hear?
Right. Yes. Right. Right. And then were people just like, what the fuck?
It was wild. It was wild. Because then even Whoopi was like, because then they had him sing again, like, I think like at a commercial break. Because then obviously like, he wasn't just a little good.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Then she was like, what? Yeah, and he was doing like Porgy and Bess at the Met. And what? I mean, it's always fun too when the ladies like, because they are always like listening.
Right.
So like, they will sometimes like get involved. And I feel like, especially with Whoopi, like that stand up ear is still there. So like, sometimes she'll do the slow like,
right,
what's going on over there?
She's clocking it.
Yeah.
What was it like working on her show on NBC?
I'd never worked on a sitcom before, so that was super interesting.
Because that was it in front of a live audience, or was it single cam?
It was in front of a live audience, and it's funny, I don't remember who, but it was taped in front of a live studio audience. But I think just how long that process is, I would have like never imagined that watching a sitcom, you know, and it's like they go back or they do another take, or they, you know, like it's all this stuff that you just think, you know, how it works. And then you're like, this is crazy.
Or the like amount of time that it takes to get one thing. Cause it's like, I'm shooting Regina's face and I'm shooting the side of the face and the behind the face and then this and that. Every reaction so many times. It's so, I mean, it's a lot of wait, like waiting.
Yes, so much waiting. And then it's like, when then I'm like, oh, and then this audience is supposed to like stay on board, even though they watch the same thing 10 times from like 10 different angles. Yeah, so that was like an interesting, I don't know if I walked away from that being like, I love sitcoms. Like, I think I was like, I really like live TV because it happens in the moment and then it kind of has to be done.
Were you still auditioning? Back to live TV. Were you auditioning yourself?
I still wasn't doing stand-up then. So like, no, I was doing no stand-up. Stand-up came last, I guess, in my whole like journey. It was like SNL and then improv and then Whoopi in there and then back to SNL a little bit. And then like trying to figure stuff out. And then
do you think you would want to do acting?
I think I would love to be myself doing something like some kind. I feel like every time I would do like talking head stuff, even though it's like you do all those dumb pilots and none of them get picked up.
Yeah,
but
never.
Like it was like
never picked up.
Every time I was like, this is the one.
Yeah, I used to get so excited. I'd be like, oh my God. Oh. And then now if someone says that, I'm like, if you think we need to do that, I'll do it. But I don't, you know.
It's so funny how when you think back to like everything you thought was the thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then you're like, this is it. This changes the game.
Yeah.
And then now you realize like that doesn't exist. Like you can't even get excited about anything. And it really does. Like you are like, even at the debate, like we were backstage and like the crew, like before we started, they were like, are you nervous? And I was like, I mean, I want to succeed, but like as a comic, like part of me is dead inside. Like, you can't hurt me. Like it's gone. Like I'm going to be able to do this because like, you know, whenever you do like that midnight pancake breakfast.
Yep.
And it's like, kids are trying to eat and study. And you're like, hey, like, no, like
oh God, I only did one of those at a college.
Yes.
I've only done one of those. I actually forgot it. I've done the prom shows, which are, I would say, as bad, but the midnight pancake breakfast, I did one of those. I hosted it, but this was, I forgot about that, where they have that you go up while the kids are literally stoned, fucked up, trying to eat pancakes, supposed to be like doing your act.
Right. And then this one, I remember they did the pancake breakfast because they were like studying for finals.
Right.
And then I was like literally talking to someone and she was kind of like, I have a final tomorrow.
Yeah, I have to go.
In my head, I'm like, why am I here?
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Like, please go study for your final. I'm not trying to take you away from that.
Just eat your pancakes.
There's something freeing when you do figure out when there's something that clicks and it's like, okay, nothing is gonna, this could go great and something won't necessarily happen and it could go bad and it won't necessarily happen. It,
right.
It needs some pressure.
Right. No, it's, and it was funny because that one show, it was in Savannah, Georgia. And my brother had come with me because then we were going to like take a side trip to like Charles. So he came to me and I remember the like whoever was my contact brought us into the cafeteria, like flipped all the lights on. He was like, well, this is where the show will be. And they're getting the pancakes. And then my brother was like, I can't watch this.
Yeah.
He was like, I don't think I can watch this. Yep. And like, and it was funny because upstairs I would have like a breastfeeding room. That was like my green room. And then that was, so then like literally like he was like, I'm gonna stay in this breastfeeding room. I don't know what else to do. He was like, I can't watch. And he said he was on the phone with my mom. And he was like, what if she comes back and she's crying? Like, what if she, and my mom was like, I bet she's going to be okay. And then, but that was a good trip because he was like, I don't exactly understand what you do. It's kind of good to have somebody not in it.
Yes.
See what we do. And then be like, oh, this is like, cause it's like, we don't think about it after a while. Like I remember me and him got to the hotel room. I like put the remote control in the plastic bag from the ice. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, you don't want to touch this remote. And he's like, I don't even understand.
Yeah. You got like, a whole thing. Yeah. You're like, I do my fucking routine. Wait, I don't know about that remote control trick. What's that trick?
Oh, I take the plastic bag in the ice bucket and then I put the remote in there. So I never actually touch the remote.
Oh, fuck. That's a good one.
But it was just funny because he's like, I don't understand what you're doing. I don't know who you are. And then after that show, though, I felt like he had such a different understanding. Because you were saying, too, sometimes you go to a college that's close by, you bang the show out, you get home, you pocket all that money. It's amazing. But when you fly or like, it's like the game changes.
And you're some going of them really far and it's really hard and the kids aren't paying attention. And also it sees, he's like, oh, you're not just dicking around. You're like really working.
Yeah.
And it's like hard. But then was he like, why do you, cause I had some family in Virginia come to a show that was like that. It was a college. The kids were like, it was the orientation and it was tough. The kids were talking, like a fryolator was frying things. And I remember my family member looking at the fryolator, like, why is this food happening? Why she's trying to talk? It was really embarrassing. And I felt, they didn't say this, but I felt that they were wondering, like, what the hell are you doing?
I feel like I've had family at other shows that would just be like, you know, when you're like, oh, this isn't going the way. Because you know how I feel like we can tell before it happens how it's going to go down?
Sometimes, yeah.
And then like, not all the time, but like, I remember there was one show and like my aunt and cousin, and I was just like, oh, it's not going to be it. And then I feel like after they're just like, they hugged me, but I was like, there's whatever. Like, but I knew it and it's fine and we'll move on from this.
When did you meet your husband, your now husband?
Oh, my now husband. Oh, my goodness. What were we saying? Is it like 12? It's a long time now. It's crazy. It was 2007, I think.
Good for you.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was gross crazy.
So, you met him before you were doing comedy.
Yes. So, and actually, like, he was also instrumental, I think. It's funny because he was, like, when we met, he was, like, big into outdoor stuff, like hiking, biking, like, all the stuff. And that wasn't me. Like, I don't know if I sit outside at a restaurant. Like,
right.
But he was like, no, we're doing stuff. So he got me, like, to do all this stuff. And, like, my whole life, I threatened to do stand-up. Like, people be like, you should do it. I'm like, I'm going to do it.
Right.
But it's still, like, you really have to, like, everybody that starts young, I give them so much credit.
But me too.
Like, We needed to be where we needed to be. And it's like, you can't get mad after a while.
Oh, also think about, I mean, college was the best time of my life. I had great friendships. I was able to like do stuff. My brain, I thought about school and dating and life. It wasn't like obsessed with comedy. And I would happily go relive that. I don't think I wouldn't change. I wouldn't have started. Who knows what the fuck, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a good way to think about it. Cause I feel like, I just remember when I started comedy and you talk to like people that have been doing it and they'd be like, oh, wait till you get to 10 years. And then I'm like, 10 years.
10
I
years.
I just started. And I'm like, it's going to take 10 years.
Right.
But it's funny when you think about it too. It's like, no, I don't regret anything that happened first. And if comedy happened, the other stuff wouldn't have happened. Yeah. Like when I was at SNL, like I wasn't going to a wedding. Like I was missing everything.
Yeah. Right.
Cause I was there, but it's like, if I had, it would have been, it's a good way to think about. Look at this, Emma.
You have to. Because otherwise, because I remember seeing Pete Davidson at an open mic when he was like 8 years old or something. And I remember being like, what the fuck? Like, oh, man. And then when he was leapfrogging stuff, it made me start being like, I should have started at 14, but fucking then I wouldn't have been able to drive around and smoke pot or whatever the hell.
Right. No, that's a great way to think. Right. It's funny. Whenever I talk about starting young, he's always one of the, because I remember doing colleges. Like I did a college with him once and I don't even know if he was college aged.
Probably not.
And I just remember being like, I just gave him a lot of credit. I was like so much longer to like get there. Oh, but so what I was saying about my husband, like he was like doing all this stuff and we went on this like hike Labor Day weekend and I'm like hiking 10 hours up a mountain.
Jesus.
And like, yeah, it was crazy. And then all of a sudden I'm like, I'm doing all this stuff with him that I never thought I could do. And then I was like, Regina, like make yourself try stand. So literally on our way home, we were like, I think it was the White Mountains. We were coming home. We like stopped to get gas. And like, I called like at a rest stop. I like called the comic strip and like signed up for a stand-up. Cause I was almost like I proved to myself I could do what I didn't think I could do. And I think deep down I was like, Regina, like, you know, you have at least some skills that would help with, with stand like, so, and then I like signed up for the class and then like took the class of the comic strip.
The classes, I always liked taking comedy classes because I took probably maybe 3 or 4 of them because it gives you a structured way to do it, which is nice.
Yeah.
And then you get to do the graduation show. Did your graduation show go well?
It did. But I agree with you too. Cause when some people like aren't, I'm like, cause I don't think I could, if I went to a mic and it was like a normal, like depressed, if it was like mic energy, I don't know if I would have wanted to go back.
Especially in New York. I would.
Yeah. Yes.
No fucking, cause Boston, Boston, the mics were hard, but it wasn't like New York. The first time I went to
New
open
York
mic.
New York is like, it's a difficult thing, but so I was, and I had like it was funny because thinking about it now, like so many of my friends were so excited I was doing stand-up. So many people came to the graduation show. So then I went on last, which now is because they needed all those people to stay the whole
Right.
So it's like, now I know why I closed out that show.
Right.
And it was good. So it was like a really
fun. But at the time, were you like, I'm the headliner?
Yeah. I was like, this is amazing. Yeah. And then I remember I had met Josh Homer, Josh Homer.
Yes.
I met Josh doing improv. We'd taken UCB. He was already doing stand-up, I think, at the time, but we met at UCB. So he came to my graduation show, which was amazing to like be supportive. And then I remember telling him like, oh my God, I got offered to do another show. And like, if a couple friends show up, I can like do some. And he was like, Regina, let me explain to you the difference between a bringer and a show. Cause I was like, I'm getting booked all over the place.
It's happening. In New York, if you can bring people, they'll let you go on stage and you can pretty much go on stage actually. I mean, pretty wherever you want. If you bring enough,
right. The number of people changes.
Someone said once they were like, comedians never stop being a bringer. They're like, you always are bringing. They're like, but then as you get older and you're trying to, and you, or you do it longer and you're headlining, you're still a bringer. It's just not called a bringer. And I was like, oh, that's true.
That's so funny.
It's right. It's not your friend.
Yeah. That's it's so funny.
People that want to come see you perform. Right. But, and then I, that made sense too. I was like, I think I was talking about how tough bringer shows were. Some,
yeah,
tough to get people to, I mean, one time I remember putting an ad on Craigslist and I was like, I'll pay you $5 and I'll get your ticket if you come to the show. And then I did the math with the drinks and I would have been paying like $120 per, whatever it was a lot of money. So I canceled on them like the day of. I was like, I actually can't pay you to come watch me do comedy. I'm sorry.
No, because I remember there were somewhere it would be like, sometimes you had the people when it was like stressful. Like I remember one time being backstage, like counting, yeah, like, do I have enough? Am I going to perform? And then you're like, wait, I'm not even thinking about the show anymore.
Right.
Like I stopped thinking about the show. I'm just like, are enough people there? Yeah, no. Right. So it's definitely, that's so funny. We're always bringers.
I hope that you, when are you and Robin going to start your podcast? I hope you guys get it started.
Thanks.
Well, no, whenever you're ready.
Thanks. Thanks, Emma. Thanks. Now, hopefully, I feel like next week we keep saying it's been next week this for 4 months.
That's when I'm going to start running and drinking water.
Right. But look, I'm using this microphone. So
that sounds great.
This is phase one. That I'll tell her. Great. I'll be like, Robin, Emma loves the mic. We're doing it.
Crystal clear. Where can people find you online before you start your pod? Before you start the podcast?
So definitely, I've been trying to do a lot more on Instagram. So it's just Regina, Regina.DeCicco. DeChicco. And then the website's reginadechicco.com. But where are the gigs on the website, Emma?
I have a quick question. When you go in other grocery stores, you saying your last name just made me think of this. When you go in other grocery stores, are you sussing them out because you know the grocery store business so well?
That's so funny you would ask that. So when we were younger, like I said, the eight of us would be somewhere. And whenever we travel, our dads would always want to go into the grocery store.
So we'd go
in like a group of eight and they'd like, go look at meat prices, like all this. And then we'd like buy a pack of gum. Like eight people would buy like a pack of gum,
right,
as if like nobody knows the DeChicos were here.
Right.
And it would be like, here we are. But what's funny is when I was in college, like if ever I felt a little homesick, like if I go into another supermarket, there's something weirdly calming. So it's like, it's a funny thing. So like, and of course, like my dad would like bring groceries home when we were like younger, like we wouldn't always go shopping. So when I would sleep at friends' houses, they'd be like, oh, my mom's going to the store. She wants to know if we want to go. And I'm like, yes.
And yeah.
Like what?
Right. Grocery store.
Like I don't go all the time like this. Like let's see what it's like.
Right, right. You get to have the experience in real time.
Yeah. Shopping? Amazing.
Right, right. This is how you guys do it.
Is this how the other half lives? Or I would bring friends to like our stores.
Oh, that'd be fucking awesome.
I'd be like, take that Snapple. Yeah, just drink it. Just drink it. And I'd be like,
I know the owner.
And it doesn't matter how old you, like if I took you now, it would still be as expensive.
Oh, you still get to do that?
Yes.
Oh, baby. Yeah, that's fun. That is fun.
It's the funniest. Because I don't know, like, it does not
go. I know somebody. It doesn't go because you're like, I know somebody. Everyone loves a perk.
It's true. It's so
everyone loves a perk.
That's so funny.
So look for Regina on Instagram and on her website. And then when The View is back filming live and people are going out, you can catch her on before the show.
Yeah, definitely come to the show. Come visit us at The View.
Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Emma.
That was my conversation with Regina DeChicco. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Emma's Bunker. Rate and review in iTunes. If you want to be a part of my Facebook group, Emma's Dilemmas, we have a nice community in there. Trying to build things up. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening to Emma's Bunker. For a video of this episode, go to www.emmacomedy.com and click the YouTube link. Subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss bonus content and look out for a new episode every Wednesday. Skeet, skeet. Skeet, skeet. Skeet, skeet.